This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Lee Chui Lin and Sharmila Ganesan. Tonight, we are discussing what we'd like to see, ideally, from the new cabinet as we await the official lineup.
First, should we have a more technocratic government? Next, there have been calls for an East Malaysian to manage the portfolio for rural affairs. How do we identify the right people for specific ministries? Finally, why do we need better gender representation in the cabinet?
So tell us, would you like to see more technocrats in the cabinet? And who's your dream team? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08 and you are with Lynn and Sharmila. You know, every morning I wake up and I wonder, do we have a new cabinet yet? And the answer so far is no. So as we wait, we can therefore play a little bit of fantasy football and talk about what it is that we would like to see in the lineup. Because, of course, the Prime Minister, Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri Yaakob, has said he's going to announce the lineup this week after proposing it to the palace. We don't know much as yet. What we do know for sure is that opposition leaders are not going to be a part of it.
And it is a much watched and awaited for cabinet, right? Because it's going to manage a number of things that have been key issues for us for the last 1 year. The pandemic, of course, being the main thing, but also things like education, things like the economy. So a lot of things riding on the people selected for these key roles as we move forward. And of course, this has drawn a lot of speculation as well as a lot of opinions on how it should be formed. And I think largely it's been a call for picking people who are right for the job rather than the people who perhaps are connected in particular ways.
Particular ways is such a loaded phrase in this context. But people who are right for the job, I think, is particularly pressing or seen as particularly pressing because of the pandemic, right? Even, you know, ordinarily, this is something that you would ideally like to see. In the past, we have discussed what it is that ministers do. And what is the expectation? Because, of course, we have seen people rotate around ministries without necessarily having ever been a teacher or having ever been a lawyer or a scientist. And so there is an understanding to a certain degree that you don't need to have that level of technical expertise. But I think with the pandemic and the push for there to be better understanding of fighting said pandemic with science, with scientific method, and also, for example, providing aid in a way that best reflects what the people need, there has been, at least for certain portfolios, more of a call for, yeah, but can we have someone with technical knowledge?
So there's that on the one hand, people who are actually experts in the field that they would be required to manage. And then, of course, there's the question of really bringing in people who adequately represent Malaysia, right? And this always comes up, to be honest, every time we talk about a new cabinet or parliamentary representation, which is a question of Sabah and Sarawak and whether they're getting enough of a voice in the highest echelons of power in the country, really, and as to whether they're being represented in the right ways and within the right portfolios when it comes to our ministries and even in a larger sense, our parliament.
Yeah, so it's quite direct. I mean, GPS, for example, is calling on the Prime Minister to consider giving the Rural Development Ministry to an MP from Sabah or Sarawak. And according to the Coalition Secretary General, Alexander Nantalingi, it will just be more meaningful. There is an importance for relevant ministries to actually help the people involved and to have direct impact on rural areas. And so I think when we talk about representation, there are a few different aspects to it, right? So the Sabah, Sarawak and rural community aspect of it is hugely important. There is also that of youth and of gender, because the push for more gender representation within the cabinet and within parliament as a whole actually has been one that has been percolating for some time now. And for example, we've seen the Joint Action Group for Gender Equality, which is a coalition of 14 women's rights organization, releasing a statement emphasizing the need to appoint a women, family and community development minister who is gender sensitive and has the capacity to support policy work required to address gender discrimination. And I think that the specificity of this statement is important in the same way that the specificity of the East Malaysian parties is also important, because when they're calling for representation, it is for very specific reasons. It's not saying just so you have a seat at the table. It's saying seat at the table plus seat at the table plus policy understanding plus on the ground understanding.
That's one aspect of it, right? And then, of course, there's the fact that, yes, we want to see an effective minister in women, family and community development. But in a larger sense, we want to see more women. I mean, we've been talking about that 30% limit in cabinet for female representation for ages now, and we haven't yet hit it. And I think there's a real argument to be made that women needn't only be considered for the portfolios that involve women or family. I'm not sure whether we'll get there this time around. I'd like to see some inroads being made, though.
Yeah, whether we're going to get there and whether outside of representation, the person who is put in that position is actually effective, which brings us all the way back around to that technocrat question, whether or not we want people who have technical knowledge to hold important posts within the cabinet. So let us know. I mean, we're talking today ahead of the cabinet lineup. We still don't know exactly when that will be. So there has not been an official announcement. But would you like to see more technocrats in the cabinet? Would you like to share perhaps your dream team, your dream lineup, and why? Call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, addressing this question of technical expertise, we will have Haris Zainal, Senior Analyst at the Institute for Strategic and International Studies. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:15 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. The story that we're examining today is the new cabinet. We don't have an announcement yet, but while we wait for the official lineup, we've been asking you basically who you'd like to see and why, right? So would you like to see more technocrats in the cabinet? Who is your dream team? That number to call to share is 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We also, by the way, have a poll running on Twitter, which is asking the question of whether we need more technocrats in our cabinet. And so far, at least 45.1% are saying yes, 37.9% are saying, well, it depends on the ministry, while a straight up no is 17%. So share your thoughts with us. And now we're going to be crossing over to Haris Zainal, Senior Analyst at the Institute for Strategic and International Studies. Haris, thank you so much for speaking with us. First off, what have we gathered so far on what Ismail Sabri's cabinet might look like?
Thanks for the question. I think at this point in time, it's really too early to tell. Now, I am aware that there are multiple lists going around online on who will be in the new cabinet. But until these are confirmed, I think to me at least, it's hard to say anything conclusively without running the risk of speculating. But you know, that said, we know that the Prime Minister has informed us that he will not be appointing or forming a unity government. So that much at least is clear. What's also clear is that the Prime Minister will be needing to balance between political considerations, especially when factoring in his government's thin majority in Parliament, with the need to address the pandemic and pandemic-related consequences. How will this take place and who will be appointed? I'm afraid that, you know, my guess is as good as yours.
Right. So we'll have to wait and see, I guess. Now, some commentators and activists have been pushing for more technocrats to make up the cabinet in order to manage the pandemic. Where do you think this desire is coming from?
I think the desire to see more technocrats in the government could be due to the failure of certain ministers in the previous administration. And the idea behind appointing technocrats is that these technocrats would arguably be more professional and bring more value to the policy-making process, which is, you know, what the country needs right now. But, you know, that said, I think that we must also be very aware of the risk associated with technocrats who are not democratically elected, thus not necessarily accountable to the people. The worst-case scenario here is if the appointed technocrat does not have the people's best interest in mind, and this, I think, is what we really need to be guarding against.
So also, right, is technocratic expertise actually necessary or helpful for ministers, or does their role really skew towards more managerial or political tasks?
I think it really depends on the ministry in question. So, for example, some ministries are more technical in nature due to the portfolio. So ministries like health, science, technology, innovation, you know, those kind of ministries, you would arguably need someone with the technical expertise to be leading the ministry, right? And I think if the expertise can be fulfilled by someone outside of the political structure in the form of a technocrat, then so be it. I think that would be good.
So in the most recent cabinet, the finance minister, Tengku Zafrul, was a technocratic appointment, of course. Looking at past cabinets, is this a common practice?
Technocratic appointments to cabinet are not necessarily that uncommon. Yes, former finance minister Tengku Datuk Sri Zafrul was one of them. But if you recall to the 2010s under Datuk Sri Najib's administration, he had appointed Datuk Sri Idris Jalla to head the National Transformation Programme. So I think it's not that uncommon, but I think what is quite interesting with the appointment of Tengku Datuk Sri Zafrul to the finance minister position, you know, which is a position where it's traditionally held by a senior political figure, is that, you know, the role of which the technocrat is being appointed to is expanding. I think this is where it can be quite interesting.
So we've had a few of these sorts of appointments. How would you assess how well our technocratic ministers have done in the past?
Yeah, you know, it goes without saying that it's hard to assess the performance of all the technocratic ministers we have had in the past, but I think it's quite fair to look at the most recent example with Tengku Zafrul. And to me, at least, he performed relatively okay throughout the 18 months that he was heading the Ministry of Finance. You know, coming from the private sector, so obviously one of his main strengths was how he's able to engage with the public through both traditional and social media and keeping the public up to date with what's going on in his portfolio. And to be fair to him also, you know, he had invited opposition members to share their views on the budget and also the National Recovery Plan. But that's it, you know, no one is perfect. And, you know, his reluctance to introduce more fiscal spending and his reluctance to provide a higher quality loan moratorium where interest rates would not compound was criticized by some. So I think it's really a mixed bag when it comes to the technocratic ministers, and to assess them, it really needs to be on a case-by-case basis.
So you mentioned your concerns about what this might mean for democracy, right? Understandably, many people are frustrated with how things have turned out with the pandemic and therefore now might prefer the technocrats to take the lead. Could you expand on these concerns? And what are the checks and balances for non-elected technocratic leaders?
Yeah, I guess it's really a balance between serving public interests while guarding against the fact that the technocrats are not necessarily accountable to the people because they're not elected, right? So during these times of this pandemic, I would assume that the public would prioritize good policy making and which delivers good results that are felt by all layers of society. So even if that comes at a slight or small risk of this technocrats not being elected to the people and not being accountable to the people, perhaps that's a risk that they are willing to take right now. The checks and balances that we can think of is that the technocrat is part of a larger cabinet, right? So the idea of cabinet with a collective responsibility comes into play. So if the technocrat hypothetically performs quite badly, then that will reflect on his elected peers in cabinet. So perhaps that's one of the indirect measures towards ensuring checks and balances on the non-elected technocrats.
So from our experience over the past year, what have we learned about roping in experts to help the government handle the pandemic efficiently?
I think what the pandemic has really taught us is that the government does not necessarily always know better. So the pandemic, to me at least, has served as a wake-up call for the government about welcoming insights and suggestions from all stakeholders. So, you know, as you know, Malaysians, we are not a monolithic block, and each of us are facing different challenges during this pandemic. It only makes sense for more Malaysians from all walks of life and not just the political elite to be represented at the table. And this is what I think is important, to have a diversity of voices and of lived experiences when it comes to policymaking to handle the pandemic more effectively.
So moving forward, how can the new government tap into relevant expertise and representatives most effectively as we continue to face the pandemic?
I think what's most important is for the government to just set its ego aside and to engage experts genuinely. Time and time again, during the course of the pandemic, we have seen experts outside of the government structure writing in and voicing out their ideas on how things could be done better. So, for example, we've seen education policy experts and also teachers giving practicable solutions on how to make distance learning work better for the teachers and for the students. So moving forward and to tap into the relevant expertise, I think all the government really needs to do is to engage and convene these experts, because again, time and time throughout the past 18 months, they have shown their willingness to help and contribute.
And finally, Ismail Sabri has also said that opposition MPs will not be part of the new cabinet and therefore it's not going to be a unity government. What can be done to involve input from the opposition for effective governance?
Sure. My view is that we should look beyond the cabinet appointments. And while it might be a shame to some that the opposition does not receive any appointments in the new cabinet, we must at the same time be realistic that in a Westminster system such as ours, cabinet appointments are quite political. That said, you know, and regardless of how the cabinet appointments play out, we should also see how the opposition members are included in important decision-making bodies such as the National Recovery Council and the Special Committee on COVID-19, as well as parliamentary select committees. So you know that these platforms are less political than the cabinet, so hopefully we can see some semblance of bipartisanship working out on those platforms.
Haris, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Sure, thanks so much for having me.
That was Haris Zainal, Senior Analyst at the Institute for Strategic and International Studies, talking to us about technocrats and the role that they could play and have played in the past when it comes to our cabinet. We're talking about this, of course, ahead of the official lineup being announced. As of now, we still don't know who they might be, but we'd like to know, would you like to see more technocrats in the cabinet, and who is your dream team? So far, at least, based on our Twitter poll, which is almost hitting 200 votes, yes, 47.5% are saying, yes, we need more technocrats. 36.6% are saying depends on the ministry, which is actually, I think, where I land as well. And 15.8% are just saying no.
Yes, I think I'm with you. I think it really does depend on the portfolio. I keep thinking of that picture that people keep sharing from Canada's cabinet, right, where they say the Minister of Agriculture was a farmer, the Minister of Education was a teacher. And I think that has value in some sense. So Patrick, for instance, says it may not be practical to request for technical qualifications for a minister's position now, but that should be the way forward. For now, the minister should at least be well-educated and passionate about his or her position in the cabinet.
So I think that those are two excellent traits that you bring up, Patrick. I think what I would also like to see is an openness to listen to experts. And that seems to be, for me at least, one of the big takeaways from the pandemic and the pandemic cabinet, which is to say that you don't necessarily have to be an expert in everything. But when you're consulting with the experts who have spent years studying virology or, you know, public health or whatever, are you actually able to listen, even if they're telling you something that you might not want to hear? And so I think for ministers, particularly because we've seen cabinet reshuffles, you also don't know when that might be. Perhaps technocrats don't always play an easy role or don't sit easily in that lineup. But yeah, just the ability to listen, right? And listen intelligently.
I think on that note of challenges that technocrats might face, we have Stephen saying, having technocrats in the cabinet is highly welcome, but the environment in our parliament isn't healthy enough for these people to survive, especially if they don't know how to do politicking. Being in the cabinet requires you to not only be able to carry out your relevant duties, but also some political pressure from all other directions.
Yeah, and then Stephen actually goes on to name past technocrats who did not manage to play that political game. And I think you make an excellent point. It's also something that we see whenever we talk about politics and the cabinet and ministries on the show, we will get somebody saying there is a rot and the rot is at the heart of it. And I think that there is something to that, because if the system itself is problematic, right? If the position itself requires this sort of politicking, then of course you're going to turn away people who might otherwise just be like, you know what? I want to keep my head down and do my job.
And that politicking extends to even how these people were selected. Were they selected because they actually had the skills and the know-how, or were they selected because they were on the right side and friends with the right people? And this is always the problem when there's a trust deficit.
So we want to know, as we wait for the official cabinet lineup to emerge, once it has been, so at the moment, I think it has been submitted to the palace, I believe. So we're waiting for the announcement. But let us know, would you like to see more technocrats in our cabinet moving forward? Do you have a dream team of people that you hope to see involved? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, where we also have a poll up. After this, we are going to talk about representation for Sabah and Sarawak and why that matters. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:38 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. The story we're looking at today is looking forward to our cabinet announcement, and as we do, talking about what we would like to see ideally in the lineup. So earlier we were talking about technocrats and what level of involvement we'd like to see. And we've been asking you that very question. Would you like to see more technocrats in our cabinet? And in general, as we wait for the official announcement, who would be in your dream lineup? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And speaking of dream lineup, we have heard from some East Malaysian parties, some parties in Sabah and Sarawak, that they would like the Prime Minister to consider giving the Rural Development Ministry to an MP from Sabah or Sarawak, with the basis that this ministry would be more meaningful, they would be able to enact more meaningful action, particularly for the needs of those states. And so that got us thinking about representation, but also who it is that we need filling this role when it comes to rural development. So keep those thoughts coming, whether it's about technocrats or dream team, by calling 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweeting us at BFM Radio. But now to talk about this issue of having the right people in the right positions, especially for the portfolio of rural development, we are being joined by Dr. Hezri Adnan, Executive Director of the Malaysian Institute of Economic Research. Dr. Hezri, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Lynn. Thank you for inviting.
So what were your initial thoughts on this opinion put forth by GPS that an MP from Sabah or Sarawak should hold the rural development portfolio?
Thank you, Lynn, and good evening, Sharmila. I suppose it is a fair request from our colleagues from the from Sabah and Sarawak for the position to be held by someone from there instead of someone from Peninsula. And we have done in the past with the appointment of Dato' Sri Shafiq Abdal as the KKLW minister from 2009-2015. So it's not the first time, but I think it is an appropriate measure if it could be considered by the current government. Yeah.
Is this an opinion that's widely shared by development experts?
I would imagine that this would be supported by the people in development fraternity, because about 7 million people still live in the rural areas in Malaysia, and they live in about over 26,000 villages. And if you look at the geographical spread of these villages, they occupy about 52% of the rural or Malaysian landscape. And, you know, a vast part of that would be in Sabah and Sarawak. So it is appropriate to have someone who understands the landscape in Sabah and Sarawak. Of course, the ministry by itself cannot stand alone. A minister cannot stand alone. He has to have the persuasive powers to work with other ministries as well to power on with rural development in Malaysia.
And in your view, what are the risks of appointing a minister who isn't familiar with the nuances of rural development issues in Sabah and Sarawak?
I suppose, the societal makeup in Peninsula, in Sabah and Sarawak are very different. So if you look at the our past practices, for instance, we tend to take people from Peninsula to hold this, to hold the position of rural development minister. And this ministry usually gets about 8 to 9 billion ringgit a year. So it is one of the sort of mid-tier ministries when it comes to budget. You know, it is very important. And it was also a vote bank for the people in politics. So it is a very important ministry. But I think in the lights of the pandemic and all that, I think it's very important to have someone who understands the issues in the rural areas. particularly because, you know, now that the B40 grouping, for instance, has been expanded to B60, and a quick mapping of what is the situation on the ground, particularly in the rural parts of Malaysia, needs to be done immediately, I think. And having someone from Sarawak and Sabah would be appropriate for that purpose, I suppose, yeah.
We've been spending the first half of the show talking about the need for people with technical skills to take on particular portfolios. Now, while this may not necessarily call for a technocrat appointment, what kind of credentials should a minister that's going to hold the rural development portfolio have?
It would be ideal, isn't it, if we can have a technocrat, you know? I mean, countries like Indonesia are quite, it's widely practiced there to have technocrats in government. But here it is more of fulfilling the needs of the parties in power to have that representation. So that is the main sort of criteria I thought. But coming back to your question about what kind of skill set do you need? Of course, someone who are familiar with the development agencies, rural development agencies like FELCRA, plantation sector, the agriculture sector, someone who's able to listen is also very important, I think, because it is a very complex landscape, and so you cannot be bringing out wisdom from just Putrajaya alone to tackle some of the problems on the ground. And different localities would have different set of issues, even though some of them are generic. So the ability to listen and to listen to the various voices from the communities, from the NGOs, and also from the experts as well. I think that's humility is very important, I think, in dealing with this portfolio.
Can you talk to us about the East Malaysian MPs who have held the post and the policies that they introduced?
Can you say that again, Lynn? Sorry.
Sure. Can you talk to us about the East Malaysian MPs who have held this post and the policies that they introduced?
The only MPs who've been appointed was, as mentioned earlier, was Dato' Sri Shafiq Abdal. And I think that was a conscious decision by the Prime Minister at that time, Dato' Sri Najib Razak, to balance the development focus between the three regions, the Peninsula, Sabah and Sarawak. The kind of policies, we are not short of policies. It's not really a question of what kind of policies, but it's the execution, really. And you can see during during his tenure, I think because of the realization from Putrajaya that the balance needs to be established, there was a spike in the budget itself, you know. When it comes to actual deliveries and all that, one thing which we are not too good at is evaluation. You know, we don't really evaluate our development programs. So moving forward, this is something very important. It is hard to say what has been done, but I wouldn't look just at the policy statements. I think what is more important is the delivery on the ground. And this is where it is not very apparent. What have we achieved? But most important, I think, is to do a mapping of the issues on the ground post-pandemic. And in fact, if you look at the composition of the those disenfranchised in the rural areas, the poorest used to be the Malay groups or the Putra groups. But in recent years, according to some studies, it's actually the poorest are the non-Malaysians. And that creates a kind of a new dynamics, you know, in the rural areas, having a non-Malaysians who are poor and the kind of social issues that you have to grapple with. Yeah.
Just to expand a little bit in terms of issues, once a new minister is announced, are there issues that urgently need to be addressed, particularly in relation to the pandemic?
First of all, I hope the Ministry of Rural Development had done its sort of a mapping of issues during the past year and a half. I hope at least that has been done by the technocrats, the government servant or civil service, because it would vary a lot with the kind of economic concentration in the different localities. Yeah? For instance, I was in Langkawi for a couple of years, and of course, the Langkawi being a tourist island, the economy has been completely ruptured. And, so what would be your diversification strategy? What would be the alternative livelihood strategies that need to be put in place? But this varies a lot. A locality that depends on agriculture, for instance, may not be affected too badly. Of course, the inconvenience of moving across district and all that. I live in Kedah myself. shuttling back and forth. The farmers there complain about, you know, moving across districts for because their paddy field is on the other district and having to get that permission daily. But I think the impact would be clearly delineated across the along the classification of essential and non-essential. So if they're not allowed to operate in the past few months, that would be the most disadvantaged group, I would thought.
So in closing then, we're all eagerly anticipating the lineup. What are your hopes for it?
I hope they will pick the right candidate. But again, it is not easy. You know, it is not just a question of having the right educational background. But I think what is most important is to get people with good background, sense of in terms of the integrity of the person, and also the drive, really. And also someone with persuasive powers in the political landscape, because as I said, 8 billion a year sounds like a lot of money, but you know, you have to be able to work with Ministry of Education, for instance, where you've got 60 billion a year. So someone junior, for instance, in the political sort of structure wouldn't be perhaps appropriate. Yeah. So someone senior, someone who can command some sort of clout in the current governance setup, political setup would be appropriate, I think.
Dr. Hazri, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Lynn. Thank you, Shamila. Bye-bye.
That was Dr. Hazri Adnan, Executive Director of the Malaysian Institute of Economic Research, talking to us about the cabinet position for rural development and why it's so important to get the right person. After this, we're moving on to look at gender representation and what we hope to see there. But let us know what would you like to see in the next cabinet, and would you like to see more technocrats in that cabinet? Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018 789 8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bringing fresh meaning, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:50 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We've been talking today about what we'd like to see in the new cabinet and asking you, would you like to see more technocrats in the lineup? And in general, what it is that you'd like to see, share it with us. That number to call, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018 789 8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now we're closing off our show by talking about one aspect that has come up quite a lot recently, and that is this idea of gender representation and its importance. So joining us now to talk about this is Tam Shui Wei, campaign manager of the 111 Initiative. Shui Wei, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So what are you hoping to see from the new cabinet lineup? Let's start with that.
I think we're definitely hoping to see the new administration elect leaders that actually put the people first. And what this means are competent leaders who can actually come up with new ideas and pivot to handle this pandemic crisis. And in that same vein, I think that better women representation in the upcoming cabinet lineup would actually help with that.
Are you optimistic that we'll see that sort of gender diversity?
I'm cautiously optimistic. But in that same vein, I acknowledge that our new incumbents don't really have that many women candidates to work with. So
if we were to take a step back and look at previous iterations of the cabinet, how did you feel about the gender representation in past administrations?
I think the previous government could definitely have done better in terms of including more women in the cabinet. We saw that in the last cabinet, there were only 15% of women, representing the 50% of Malaysian population of women. And even the Pakatan Harapan government before that only had 18% of women MPs. So I think in general, it really is an ongoing issue that Malaysia needs to deal with.
One of the criticisms that often comes up in conversations about representation is that across various administrations that we've had, we've seen female ministers who haven't necessarily represented the interests or the needs of women. Meanwhile, others have simply been ineffective. So, in other words, not all representation has been good representation. What are your thoughts on this?
I think that's actually a very valid comment and concern, because overall, we should be electing more competent leaders who actually respond to issues in effective and proper manners. But in that same vein, I would say that having more women represented in politics do have longer-term positive outcomes, such as normalizing seeing more women in leadership roles. And there is also very clear evidence that shows that when women participate in politics, There is more emphasis on policies surrounding quality of life, families, women, and marginalized communities. And I think that's one thing that Malaysia needs to see more of in our MPs.
So if we take it to policymaking, to the actual policies, how would representation and gender diversity lead to better policymaking?
So I think, as I mentioned before, there is evidence showing that women can be more effective policymakers than men. And why women might bring up more different issues such as quality of life, women and family, is because while women do differ in our backgrounds, overall, they tend to bring a diverse and valuable perspective to what is currently a very male-dominated process. And I think it's important to recognize that having a diversity in the gender of our cabinet will also affect in the kind of policies that are being prioritized. And I think in the same vein, when we talk about facing a crisis like COVID-19, we have seen many studies coming up showing that the pandemic has affected women disproportionately worldwide in terms of job loss, in terms of income, in terms of family life. So I think even more importantly right now, we need to see gender diversity in our policymaking and in our cabinet.
So how can we as a nation push for better gender representation?
I think first of all, political parties need to reduce their barriers and push for more mentorship programs. And we do see that in some parties where they are innovative with having programs that actually mentor young women to participate in politics. But I think collectively, as rakyats, we need to also keep our governments accountable and push for better gender representation. How that can happen is, I think, on a personal level, we need to have more conversations about tackling gender roles and having more women as leaders. And if you're a young woman yourself, I would say consider showing up in political spaces yourself. And if I may add, the 111 initiative is also currently running like a capacity building series where we want to introduce 100 young women into Malaysian political landscapes. So it's a program like ours that I think we just really want to invite more young women to occupy these spaces themselves. And I think one step at a time, we can do this together. Yeah.
Shuiwei, before we let you go, how can people get in touch with you for that program?
So you can follow us on Instagram or Facebook, just search 111 Initiative and you'll see our new program. It's called Siri Kandi.
Shuiwei, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
That was Tam Shuiwei, campaign manager of 111 Initiative, talking to us today about gender diversity and gender representation in the cabinet as we wait to see whether we will indeed have that. So we've been asking you, generally speaking, right? What would you like to see in the new cabinet? And would you like to see more technocrats specifically? And we have some messages.
So Amirul says, maybe certain ministries and depending on the need, because technocrats might be too detached from the people. And what's good on paper might be the other way around in practice. For example, Khairi Jamaluddin is not a technocrat and has done a good job so far.
So I come back to the point that we raised at the start of the show and that we heard reiterated earlier by our guest, Dr. Hezri, which is the importance of listening and humility. Because again, if you're coming into a role in which, as is often said, and as we're seeing function now, in fact, we don't have ministers, but civil servants and ministries are continuing to run, you need to have the capacity to listen, right? And you need to have the capacity to ask. So I think those aspects, building on what you're saying, Amirul, would be, for me personally, very important.
So we have Sharul saying, I wish there would be a bipartisan select committee headed by the elected minister that comprises both government and opposition MPs. So you will have education bipartisan select committee with members from both government and opposition. I like that idea, Sharul. I mean, I don't think we're going to see it because as of now, we have heard that there aren't going to be opposition members elected into the cabinet. But I wonder whether a select committee might perhaps be the way to go instead.
So I think that's a great idea, with the caveat that we don't see the kinds of blocks to conversation that exists in Parliament, for example, where government business is prioritized before anything else can come through. And this is something that we've talked about ad nauseum, and also talked about why it's important to perhaps not have. And so I think in the committee, it's a great idea. And if there were an agenda, and if the agenda were as close to equal as possible, I think we'd be getting somewhere.
Ju just says, I would like to see more new faces and better matched ministers to the ministries. Couldn't agree more. I think both of those are valid asks.
I'd love to hear back from you, Ju, on what you mean by better matched, because I think that that is the one where we get a lot of where the question is it enough for somebody to be right on paper? Is it enough for somebody to have held the portfolio before? Or are we actually assessing how well they did when they held the portfolio before, right? Because that idea of experience for experience sake is like representation for representation sake. It's not good enough that you did it before. How well did you do it? So yeah, keep those thoughts coming. We're still getting loads of messages and we'll be back to read them later on. So we want to know, what would you like to see in the next cabinet lineup? Would you like to see more technocrats, for example? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. You've been listening to Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.